one, of course, that Jesus is addressing in this little business from Matthew is the kind of complacency that religious leaders had in their own righteousness, in their own piety, in their own orthodoxy, if you will, which blinded them to what was really going on. And that casts some light on this famous passage from the letter to the Philippians. When I was a kid, this was interpreted this way. There was Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, with the Father, and then he sort of swooped down and took on flesh and then did his business, then swooped back up. Well, I think the best scholarship today point out that that's a serious misreading. And I hope to say why it's a serious misreading. First of all, the belief that Jesus was divine took 400 years to get clarified in the Christian movement. Paul did not believe Jesus was divine. It's very clear. And a proper reading of this text, I hope, illustrate that. So they had these early followers of Jesus had these three major problems. One, Jesus did not come back after the resurrection because that was supposed to be the end time. It didn't happen. Who was a real Jew? The Jews that followed Jesus or the Jews did not follow Jesus? And then most crucially, perhaps, who was this man? How can we make sense of this man? So the earliest titles are martyr, Jesus was witness, Jesus was teacher, Jesus was Messiah, which had nothing to do with divinity, of course. The Messiah was simply a descendant of David, out of the royal family. And those are the titles we find pervading the New Testament. So what did Paul come up with? Paul saw Jesus as the new Adam. And this is crucial because I think we continually in the church short-circuit the whole process of coming to faith. That is, nobody was brought to believe Jesus as the light of the world, if you will, taking a line from John, except by looking at the way in which he was a human being. It was precisely out of Jesus' humanity that the question was raised, who was this guy? How could this guy be human in this fashion? So it's not that Jesus was divine. It's, oh, Jesus sparkled. In fact, even the Gospel of John has Jesus condemning faith that's based on miracles. What's necessary then is to look squarely at the human career of this man. How did this man comport himself among other human beings? He didn't. It was not because he was walking on water or walking around in a pure white dress like all those idiotic movies have him. In the midst of all kinds of filth and squalor, here's Jesus with blonde hair, blue eyes, a white dress, untrammeled by dirt, dust, the normal rubbish of the human condition. So, how do we read this text? Again, I can't say it often enough. It's only if you look squarely at Jesus' human life that even the question arises, who was this guy? What was characteristic of him? His clear-sightedness, his generosity, his non-self-promotion, his availability to everybody, his honesty, his courage, his integrity. These are not divine virtues, you know, these are human virtues. So, to the text. Let this mind be in you. So Paul is saying these wild things. Regard others as better than yourselves. Look to each other's interest and not your own. That's what Jesus did. So he said, so look at this man who was in the form of God, which just means that Jesus, as the book of Genesis has it, was was created in the image of God like every human being was. Let us make human beings in our own image. So Jesus was in the image of God. And then back to the Genesis thing, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited. Remember, that was a temptation. Eat this fruit and you'll be equal to God. In other words, lie to yourself. Deceive yourself. Jesus would not have anything to do with that. Emptied himself, taking the form of a slave. What does that mean? Paul regularly talks about the human condition as a form of slavery. To what? To the violence, to the oppression, to the lies, to the cruelty, to the injustices of the world. And we're all subject to that. And Jesus was certainly subject to that. Being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death. Jesus did not return violence for violence. Those marvelous passages in the Passion, Jesus didn't even answer his accusers. What's the point? Jesus didn't mount some kind of great defense, self-defense. More in the Passion narrative, Peter pulls out his sword and supposedly cuts off this guy's ear, and Jesus said, no, we don't do that. That's not the way we operate. Or Jesus before Pilate, saying, my kingdom is not of this world. What is this world? How does this world kingdom work? By violence. You want to get something done? Scare the hell out of people. And it will work every time. It will work. Whether it's King College, Stephen Harper, Barack Obama, Sarkozy, whoever, anybody. That's the way to get things done. It's true. It's very efficient. But at what cost? Cost of the freedom and the reality of other human beings. So he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death. Obedient to what? To the Father and to his own humanity. You see? Jesus was faithful to his own humanity as the image of God. And that's why he was killed. And nobody can survive in this world the way Jesus did without being killed or without suffering gravely. We have Gandhi, we have Martin Luther King, we have Malcolm X, we have Oscar Romero, we have all kinds of instances of the very same thing in our own world, which we somehow like to glorify and put sparkles on and remove from this violent world that we inhabit and constitute. But because Jesus did not succumb to that mode of operating, that's why God was pleased with him. That's why God raised Jesus and gave him a name above every name, so with the name of Jesus, every knee should bend, blah, 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 etc. But you see, we religious people seem to have, and I'll talk about this later, this inescapable tendency to mystify, to cloud, to glorify, to dress up in all kinds of fancy accoutrements, rather than look to our own consciences and our own manner of behavior to see where religion is really rooted in the human heart. So, because, you know, we have Jesus, the glorious Jesus, you know, Jesus walking on water. We miss it. We miss it. Over and over and over. And we continue to miss it. But this is why they came to think, this man is extraordinary. Extraordinarily human. And that's why he must be the Son of God. In the literal sense. Because the title Son of God, which is brought up often enough in the New Testament, is just what the Jews regularly called anybody who is faithful to God, a son of God. We have to demystify, in other words. We have to demystify. We have to look at the real costliness of Jesus' life and what we're called to as Christians.